Get ready.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host.
And I'm Paul Henderson, your semi-regular guest-ish co-host.
And if you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week and we get to know our guest. It is episode 191 of the Weekly Cooldown, and it is June 2nd when you're listening to this, or it's June 1st when you're on stream with us. Happy Pride. Yay.
It is important to point out that today is June 1st for live folks, because Street Fighter 6 isn't out yet.
It's out for certain people.
It's out for like half the world right now, and it's coming out in like 4 hours in the States, and I can't wait. I'm gonna scream. United
States, you are out of luck.
I'm actually legitimately considering VPNing just so I can play it 3 hours early. There's a method you can do to unlock games early on Steam, but
I've seen it.
Really know if I want to try that hard. It's tempting, though.
It is tempting. But we are getting there. We are almost at the one of the heights of this summer for video games. Street Fighter.
A lot
6.
Of good releases all this summer.
There.
pretty much
downhill, then uphill a little, and then back down. But yes, it is June 1st or June 2nd, depending on when you're hearing this, listening to it, or seeing it. And it is Pride Month, as we said, as well. It is indeed Pride Month. So as you know, we always do on the Weekly Cooldown a whole Pride Month with just gay, trans, etc. guests. And that's what we're doing again this year. We have with us Shintir from the Maelstrom Radio podcast. I almost forgot it for a second. I apologize.
Same.
Hi, Safe.
And before we get into things, really, I wanted to do a quick ramble. This year is kind of unlike any other years with regards to Pride, with regards to gay and trans rights. It is extremely vitriolic this year. There are a lot of states in the United States that are doing things to pull back on rights that we have been fighting for years. And by we, I mean us and generations past and now future generations as well are going to have to do a whole lot of fighting. In Uganda, in Africa, they just passed legislation to basically put trans people in jail for up to 7 to 20 years. Gay people, trans people, 7 to 20 years in jail or be given the death penalty that country. So it's a really very stressful year for gay and trans people all across the world, not just in the United States. And I really wanted to take just that quick moment to ground us, because for as much as I want this to be both a celebration and kind of a unique discussion about where we are in this moment in time, I just want to make sure that we are grounded in the reality of this moment as well, and that it is a moment of celebration, but it is also a moment of a kind of intense turmoil. And I want us to navigate that with our allies and our friends in our hearts and minds. So thank you for letting me say that.
Of course.
And let's jump right into it. So Shintir, welcome to the show. It's been a while.
It has been. I feel like has it been a year?
I think so.
The last time that I was here was last Pride.
Last Pride. I think you are my usual first Pride guest, because I'm just like, I usually think about you around May, and then it's like, oh, wait, June's around the corner.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be about that time, isn't it? All right, well, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. So welcome back. Tell the folks about Maelstrom Radio. What's that?
It's a good question. We're not really sure either. I'm one half of Maelstrom Radio, Peter being my co-host. We are presumably a Final Fantasy 14 podcast, but in general, we also end up talking about a lot of things not related to Final Fantasy, a lot of MMO discussion between development and other games, other things we'd like to see, etc. We also both stream now relatively consistently. We do co-op games on Thursdays. I do like a nice cozy comfy stream on Sundays, and Peter plays some games from his backlog on Tuesdays currently.
Very cool.
But yeah, that's
cool.
Us.
And where can people find you streaming?
You can find us streaming on the Maelstrom Radio channel at twitch.tv/Maelstrom Radio.
Perfect. All right. Well, and you're pretty gay, huh? No, I'm
kidding. So, what
my shirt doesn't say anything.
That's really, really cool. And I am always glad to be on Maelstrom Radio.
We love having you.
Having cool banter with you guys and doing all the crazy stuff that y'all do over there. I'm waiting to be called back for a quiz show episode, which, as we know, I would dominate.
Yeah.
As we all know.
I don't know. We'll see if I can beat Jace at it now.
Oh, is that a challenge?
I don't have a gauntlet to drop, but if I did, it would be.
Cool. So the theme of this week's Pride episode is we have always been here. As I said at the top of the show, there's been a lot of vitriol against gay and trans folks as of late. If you open up anything on the internet regarding gay and trans folks, you'll see people using the word woke a whole lot. What does it mean? I don't think anyone knows at this point, but
nothing anymore.
It certainly feels like a lot of people are upset that we are suddenly here, but in reality, we've always been here. So what I really want to dive into are some first LGBT things happened in video games, kind of digging into and decoding why and how games and developers add and decide to have LGBT characters, LGBTQ characters, and inclusivity in general, right? What can we do? How can we do it, et cetera? And then some additional questions after that. So to get started, really quickly, I want to talk about a game that I happened upon when I was doing a little research about this topic called Caper in the Castro. Caper in the Castro is apparently one of the first, if not the first, LGBTQ game, then said to be LGBT, right? Because it was released in the 1980s. It's released by a transgender person. I forgot their name already. Paul, you know
CM Ralph.
CM Ralph, there we go. They use they/them pronouns. And they released this game as kind of a freeware donations welcome kind of thing. One, the first of its kind almost. And as a way, of course, of getting LGBTQ content out there, right? And they have a really robust kind of engineering background as well. So it's, once again, someone in engineering doing something really, not radical, but radical for the time, right? Introducing this kind of character into the, or this kind of game, and subsequently the character. Now, CM Ralph does say that as a game doesn't really hold up to the things that we think about when we think of inclusivity and kind of progressive values and things like that. I think the main character has some kind of really weird name. Last name I think is like McDyke or something like that. Very strong into the lesbianism, right, of it all, but also very kind of in your face and kind of provocative. So with that in mind, what I wanted to do is kind of see how we've grown, right, how the arc of time has taken us to where we are now. With that in mind, what are some games that come to mind almost immediately when we think about LGBTQ characters, do you think?
For me, weirdly enough, it's probably Borderlands.
Sure.
Okay. Borderlands is the first one that immediately comes to mind to me, which is crazy given Gearbox's whole thing, but at the very least, like, the writers and the studio behind Borderlands was very interested in writing a very progressive story that at least had queer moments in it. And just, I think, like, several of the side characters are very explicitly very gay. And it's presented in a way that's very natural and not forced. Like, I can't remember the doctor, what's his name, just like straight up has a not the doctor. He's like a cowboy or something. God, it's been so long since I played Borderlands. It's been goddamn forever. But there's a character who's just straight up like, well, I'm kind of sweet on this one dude. And it's like, it's just presented so naturally. And the queerness in Borderlands was kind of interesting in me in that it felt like it didn't really stick out. In a way, it wasn't like written to like put the queerness on a pedestal, but it was just sort of a natural part of the world. And it's like they were out in the middle of nowhere on a planet owned by a corporation, so it's not like anybody gave a shit.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's really important that you the way you reference that, right, is that you say it's not it feels organic to the setting, right? There's a lot of characterizations of gay people that show them as being effeminate or quote unquote stereotypical, right? In a way that is supposed to confuse the viewer, right? Make the viewer ask a little bit a little more than one question, right? And used almost comically almost every time as well, right? The character really has no depth other than being like a sassy, usually effeminate kind of gay man, or they are quote unquote confused about their gender, right? And it's
or they're quickly killed off, or the villain,
right? Exactly.
those are the options.
Never used in a way that makes one feel like, oh, that's just a person who happens to be gay. Always used in a way to make you feel maybe a little uncomfortable or make you laugh at them or quote unquote with them in a way. And so having a character like the one you mentioned in Borderlands, who is just kind of like, yeah, I'm a dude here on the same wasteland planet as you.
Sir Hammerlock, by the way, was the guy I was thinking of.
Who's this?
Sir Hammerlock was the guy I was thinking of. He like, there's a whole side quest where he like asks you to find audio logs from his ex-boyfriend, basically. And there are a ton of other examples throughout the series of characters that are openly, explicitly queer, but that's the one that first came to mind to me.
And it's just very organically mentioned too. Yeah, I think that's really important. And I'm glad that they had the kind of foresight to do something like that, right? Just kind of like pin drop it in. Shin, what's on your mind?
The one that kind of came to mind, and it's probably just because I'm it's a game that I play quite often right now, is Guild Wars 2. And it came out back in 2012, which not too long ago. But since it's came out, it's always had a lot of very queer relationships, characters, etc., including two very prominent main characters who are there from not quite day one, but almost day one. And I've been with you for over a decade at this point now. But just a very solid lesbian couple that just happens to, they're awesome. But throughout that entire game, there's just a lot of queer representation. And again, like you said about the Borderlands, it doesn't feel like it's been forced in. It's just, that is how the characters are. That is the story. They are not used in any way to portray anything or assume anything. They're just characters. They're there. The other one that came to mind and I haven't played is Celeste, just because I know it was very strong. that I've heard from a lot of people, but I haven't played that one yet. So
Celeste is just one giant trans metaphor, basically.
That's pretty funny.
That's pretty sick.
Someone actually brought up Guild Wars 2, I think a few months ago, because there was this kind of upheaval, I think, that happens in one of the main areas. And people need a lot of help and saving and stuff like that. And there's one NPC who was male when you met them, but is now transitioned actually. And is like, when you speak to them, oh, do you remember me? You saved me from X. Oh, you may not though, because my name was whatever back then, but now it's this. And it's so kind of natural, right? It's just that character is just there. And it's one of those things where if you're not paying attention, you'll miss it, right? And you have to actually go and engage with that character. And it's that kind of thing, I think, both of you are talking about, where it's just kind of like folded in very nicely into the package that is already the video game.
Elder Scrolls Online has also done that a little bit.
Yeah. And it's not to say that...
I was surprised. Like, I literally walked across something, and then there's a whole, like, little gay sub quest. I'm like, yep, that was cool.
And it's not to say that the more in your face, I guess, kind of bam, this person's gay attitude about video games can't also be a good thing. But it is that I think we appreciate the representation more when it is kind of organic and fluid, right? When you meet people for the first time, they already have their assumptions about you, but you know, until there's some kind of confirmation, everyone is just kind of passing each other on the street, right? To have those characters kind of basically do the same thing, where it's just like, have you met my husband? And you're just like, oh, cool.
it's very important. Anymore.
I think it's very important to have that kind of thing happen in video games. So thank you both for sharing those examples. I actually don't have an example, and here's why. It's only been very recently for me that I've paid very close attention to that kind of thing in video games. When I think about Ocarina of Time, for example, where Zelda goes incognito as Sheik, to me, that's just like something she did to survive. Mm. But to other people, right, there is a critical queer lens to that, where it could be considered transgenderism. So pardon me, but it could be considered kind of there could be a trans reading to it. I didn't really think about it that way, right? I've never considered that either.
Yeah.
I actually have some thoughts about that. That's an example. As I got older and learned about trans people as a thing, I didn't really know what a trans person was till I was like 21, 22, I think. And then once I learned about it, I was like, okay, that makes perfect sense. I always extrapolated that out because there were a lot of jokes like on message boards back in the late 90s, early 2000s about, oh, Sheik is a girl or Zelda's a man or whatever. And my logical conclusion that I brought to the whole Sheik, Zelda, Ocarina of Time thing was I kind of view that iteration of Zelda as bi-gender, actually.
Mm.
Essentially, when she is Zelda, she is a woman. When he is Sheik, he is a man. And they can interchangeably use he, him, or she, her pronouns, depending on their presentation / how they put themselves forward.
And I love that.
Especially because they kind of tried to mitigate this a little bit in further iterations where Sheik existed by giving Sheik a ponytail to make him appear more feminine. To be like, oh, look, Sheik's a girl.
Right.
There's a ponytail. But the ponytail didn't exist in Ocarina of Time. They added that in later designs of the character. And so, like, that's always how I viewed it, is just sort of like a gender toggle, basically, to go along with the physical, with the appearance and apparently physical ability change that comes with these transformations between Sheik and Zelda.
Yeah, Sheik does have some more like skills going on. But that's a really interesting lens. I didn't think about it that way at all either. So very, very good take. Hot take, but a good one.
I don't know if it's hot.
I don't think I've ever read Sheik as any specific gender.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Like definitely is not going for any, doesn't like, has a this is long before non-binary was kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Like as a term, but like, I think less of maybe by gender, but also just not like more closer to non-binary.
Yeah.
I don't think that Sheik ever used any particular pronouns for like as Sheik.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Other characters referred to them with he, him, but that was just a this is our best guest based on what we see. Mm. So I think that that's very much ambiguous and on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, Sheik is very mysterious in the presentation. So to guess their gender at all, I guess, is kind of like, why would you he, him, or she, her? It's just them. That's just them.
Unless your localization didn't have to do it, but
sure. Right, exactly. There's a lot of examples of characters. For example, Birdo from Super Mario Brothers 2 is apparently a trans woman.
That's an interesting example because they've tried so hard to just retcon the shit out of that.
Yeah, they have.
Ash from Streets of Rage 3 is apparently gay. Go figure. There's Flea from
Chrono Trigger is a big one. That's a big one.
Gender queer or gender non-conforming.
Yeah.
What else we got? What's another good one? I never really. Again, by the way, Flea, I always thought of as just kind of like a androgynous male, I guess.
Yeah.
But now that the concept of non-binary, gender queer, gender non-conforming is in my head, I'm like, no, yeah, I can see that. Sure, like absolutely.
Reading through all like the different characters, one, it's kind of sad that we can actually make a whole list of all of them.
But, yeah.
It's making a list of video game characters in general would be impossible. Sure. But of all of the characters that are listed, how few that I've actually seen. Like most of these games are not games that I have personally played. And it's just.
Yeah. I think also, the MMOs really like to add. Which I enjoy, by the way, I should say. But I think MMOs really enjoy kind of adding in, when you can, as many LGBTQ characters as they can, right?
That depends. Like,
okay.
Final Fantasy 14. There are no characters whatsoever.
Not in the big book of people you should care about now.
Yeah. Are there any even side quest characters or smaller characters?
There was, I think, one side quest where these two adventurers wanted to be together, but their respective tribes were very not into the idea of them being together. And I think it was a Mikote and a Rogadin, which
if they are, they're on this list.
It's not on this list whatsoever.
I'm going to assume the list is complete, but apparently Wanderer's Palace as a queer couple.
Yes.
Islander and Miko.
Yes, interesting. Chat blowing up a little bit about it. Yes, but we did have that, and I think that's the most we've ever gotten, really.
We used to have lots of queer-coded characters.
Yes, there's a lot of queer coding, but not outwardly queer characters. Whereas you have, like, League of Legends and Overwatch, and they're like, well, yeah, here, which one would you like? I don't know. There's a lot to think about in regards to characters, how they're presented, right? And I hope that now that we've gotten over a few hurdles with regard to our society, right, especially in Western culture, that those thoughts are being more, you know, collaborated on, right? That we do see more gay and trans and queer people in the writers' rooms. Shout out to the WGA.
Not even in the writers' rooms. Like, I feel like there's a good amount in writers' rooms.
It's more,
I think, the level above them that vetoes what they want.
Sure.
They get the management and the corporate side of things.
Yeah.
On board.
Give me some gay, trans, queer executives. Yeah.
There we go.
Someday.
That list is probably a lot smaller.
Yeah, unfortunately. But yes, that being said, inclusivity still does need work, even with these characters that we've spoken about. The games that exist, they've not always been the best representations. But hopefully, again, that changes going forward. So we kind of touched on this with my first question, but I want to kind of revisit it because we talked about the game that came to mind immediately. But what was the first character you played that you realized was LGBTQ or gay or lesbian or anything?
Like a player character?
Like what?
Or the first game that we played.
Yeah. Like, you know, a character in a video game that you were like, oh, that's a gay guy or whatever. And did you relate to them at all? Right. What the first person that comes to mind for me, actually, and it's the worst person I can think of is Vulgan from Metal Gear Solid 3, who is not outwardly gay, but does have a gay lover, according to the lore that Kojima writes. And Vulgan is as he sounds, right? He is vulgar. He's the villain. He's tall and brooding and scary. And it wasn't so much that I could not relate to him that I felt like I did not, like I was repulsed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was very much like, oh, this is not who I want anything to be associated with at all. And it's a different feeling from seeing someone on screen who is the quote unquote stereotype, like we spoke about before, and feeling like a little confused about, you know, how you feel about that. And seeing this man on screen be very kind of assaulting to other characters and other men, especially, and being like, no, thank you. And it's unfortunate that that's my first kind of the first person that comes to mind, right? I don't have a better way into gay and queer characters other than my brain goes specifically to Metal Gear Solid 3's Vulcan. And then it goes to Vamp, who is not better. So it's like, where does my brain, how do I get my brain to go to a better character? What do you got?
I think mine might be Knights from Knights into Dreams, actually. Okay. Because
interesting one.
Knights is explicitly presented as a character whose gender is whatever you perceive it to be. Explicitly. It's like if you perceive Knights as male, Knights as male. If you perceive Knights as female, Knights as female. And now that I've realized that the binary doesn't have to exist, if you perceive Knights as non-binary, woo, you win. You win a prize. But and so retroactively applying that to Knights, because when I was a kid, I always perceived Knights as female. The purple and the jester aesthetic and just general like flowiness and like danciness was very feminine to me. But now that I've grown up some and I know more about the world, and I feel like a lot of this is colored through the lens of me growing up and learning things. Mm-hmm. Seeing Knights as the gender fluid creature that they are is a very interesting and cool thing to me. And in a way gives me some security in my gender as a non-binary male. As somebody who is like, I am generally perceivable as male. I got facial hair for days. I got a pretty low voice, not a super masculine voice, but is down there. And I don't exactly try to dress particularly feminine. But if somebody perceives me as, you know, not the most masculine person in the world, because I also keep my hair long, you know, I'm not going to bitch about it. Yeah. And so just having somebody's gender be, or having a character's gender be, you know, whatever you see, man, that's good by me. I kind of rock with that. That's super cool to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I can internalize that to some degree.
Sure. Shin, have you thought of one yet?
Yeah, like, I was trying to think about this for a while, and I could not come up with a good game or a character that I could think of that I ever really like realized or thought of it. Mm-hmm. The closest I could get is like the first game that I really that I was very, very much acutely aware of everything was Hades. Zagreus is incredibly, incredibly. Yeah. There's a lot of good art in that game.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people liked that game for like the same reasons.
Yeah.
They all got it.
It is interesting. I was talking about this earlier today too, and just part of it is also that, like you said, we're talking about with Sheik, like you don't think about it at all. And even up until today, like I very much late in life coming out and figuring things out, but like there's a lot of things that I don't even pay attention to, like knights, good example. I don't know if I ever gendered them. I don't think I would have even considered, are they what's their gender? They're just, that is them.
They're just a friend.
And it's not something I ever really thought about. And I feel like that's probably a lot with the aceness side of things. Like,
sure.
It's like, yep. Oh, right. People think about these things.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays I think about it a lot. So
yeah, in hindsight, and now that, like, as like you were saying, like as you learn and you grow, like you think and you see a lot more, you understand a lot more, and yeah. Kind of like, oh, hey, in retrospect,
in hindsight, 2020. So we kind of touched on it, but like I said, the portrayal of Volgin does not really hold up at all. Volgin is everything I wish they did not put into a character who could like men. it's a really tough character to look at. It's very satisfying when you defeat him, right? Because for many, many, many different reasons, but specifically for me, because it's like, finally, I'm rid of that person, that ordeal, all of that out of my face. Just very difficult. I think the idea of knights is actually probably the best portrayal or character that would ever hold up across like time at this point. And I appreciate bringing knights into this conversation. Although Paul makes a point to try and bring knights into any conversations.
That's true.
I think
a lot of like unintentionally non-binary or agender characters tend to hold up fairly well.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, what's the character's name? I don't know. Undertale.
Mm.
Our character's not gendered.
Sure. Yeah.
They're the character.
I think the one that actually comes to mind that I personally feel like maybe does not fit that category is Poison, who I believe is from Final Fight. Poison was supposed to be a transgender character. Poison was brought over to, I believe, Street Fighter from Final Fight during Street Fighter 4, Ultimate Street Fighter 4, I think. And they basically removed the idea that Poison could be transgender and just decided to make them a female. Just outright. And also did it in a very kind of weird way, right? So there was Poison as they exist in Final Fight. Nintendo had a ban on violence against women.
Yeah.
But decided then that instead of having Poison be a woman, they would be transgender, and so you could fight them instead, which is like
weird loopholes.
Yikes, you know, like it's a very weird loophole. And then they decided to make Poison a woman instead, just flat out. But there was like a weird section of the internet, and I don't mean like trans activists, I mean like the weird section of the internet.
Yeah.
Who really got angry about that, right? And wanted the kind of we're very focused. Let's just put it out there on the genitalia of the character, despite the fact that there was no mention of that in any of the video games, and got very uproarious with Nintendo, with Capcom about that. And I'm like, this is a fighting game, sir. Can you relax? Yeah.
So despite Nintendo's very odd decision to make a transgender character the beat-upable one, the other thing is that you have the internet to contend with, right? You have people on the internet who are just insanely into something, fetishizing not only a character, but a type of person that exists. And none of it feels good. And quite frankly, I don't think it holds up very well, even after we've decided that Poison is just female. Yeah. It's very fraught.
On that note too, though, like in terms of things not handling it well, there's also been recent situations where it has kind of the opposite way, right? Mm-hmm. Bridget from Guilty Gear's,
yeah,
the one that comes to mind.
Sure. Which is example.
Almost the exact opposite scenario.
Yeah. Bridget's whole gender started out as a cheap joke at the expense of trans people, and I guess cross-dressing too. With her backstory, I mean, on paper being kind of interesting with how it's handled with her whole, the village, you have to have one son and one, or one daughter or something. And if you have two sons, terrible things will happen. And then Bridget's like, well, I'm going to prove it to everybody that I can still be cool, even if I'm dressed as a woman, even though I'm a man. And then like 20 years of, 20 years of jokes about her later, Daisuke was like, we need to right some wrongs. And when she was introduced as DLC, her story mode is like, okay, I'm a girl now. I figured my shit out. I want to be happy with myself. And some people did get weird about that, of like saying that she was like forced into her femininity as a child and making the decisions for herself. And you can, I guess, get into a debate about nature versus nurture if you really want to go that deep with it. But like, by this point in the story, Bridget's an adult. She can make whatever decision she wants, and she decides she is a woman. It's simple as that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Nature or nurture, whatever she decides right now, that's pretty much it.
Heaven or hell, let's rock.
Exactly. And the fighting games in general have a very interesting history with trans people in general as well. Two more examples I can think of off the top of my head. Leo Kleinson from Tekken is a non-binary, explicitly very non-binary character. And they are actually, that's the reason why I mained them, is because I saw that they were non-binary and it was like, oh, I need to play them. And they're very cool. I also play Paul Phoenix, of course, because he's voiced by Jameson Price and I don't have a choice. But there's also Cagliostro and Ladiva from Granblue Fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And those are two very different presentations of transness. Ladiva being a very large, masculine appearing woman who chooses to be very masculine. She has a beard, she has giant muscles, she doesn't really have any like feminine features beyond like her manner of dress is a little feminine, but she is otherwise like a Zangief built type person. And the reason that she doesn't like try to, you know, make her body more feminine is because she kind of, it's an interesting twofold, twofold aspect to it. One, she has a lot of respect for her parents, and she has some hangups around her parents and not wanting to disrespect her, what her parents created, which you can probably throw that aside. That's kind of shaky. But also she is a wrestler and she values the strength that her body gives her to make her a very strong wrestler, which is a totally, in my opinion, valid reason to want to be a huge woman that can like throw people. But on the other side, there is Cagliostro, who is a very small, typical, like skinny anime girl, very, very feminine presenting. But she is an alchemist. And as an alchemist, she is able to transfer her soul between different vessels. And she's like hundreds of years old. And after living most of her life as a man, she decided to create a new vessel and become a woman. And that's just presented as a fact. It's not like a major revelatory moment within the story of Granblue Fantasy or anything. And what's really interesting is that Ladiva and Cagliostro, in one of their conversations in Granblue, actually like talk about their transness and how they both present in these different, very diametrically opposed ways. And that's where like Cagliostro is basically like, you know, I could give you like a super, super feminine body if you really wanted to. And Ladiva's like, no, I'm super comfortable with this. This is great. I'm living my best life. I'm the happiest woman I've ever been in my life. And so they like they come to an understanding with each other in this conversation, and it's just two very interesting and cool ways that transness can be presented in a video game. And it's very progressive. Like, as I don't play Granblue myself, I play Fantasy Versus a little bit, but from what I understand, from what I've heard about talking to other people who have played the game, played Granblue, it's just like perfectly well handled. It's very like naturally integrated into the story, and nobody like throws a fit about it. It's pretty cool.
It's the same with a lot of the characters, lesbian and bisexuality. They're just kind of existing within this larger world of, first of all, billions of other characters, right? Granblue is first a gacha game, so there's tons and tons and tons of characters. But then Granblue Fantasy Versus distills them out a little bit. And yeah, you get two trans woman characters, you get a few lesbian characters, I believe, and I think one bisexual, whose name I can't remember. I play versus every now and then when I get the urge. But it's again, one of those things where these characters were already like gifted to you as written, right? They were already trans and already bisexual and already lesbian. And that's just who they are, and people love the game and play it still. And there's like an update to Versus coming out, and a new adventure game for Granblue coming out. Like, there's tons of possibility with LGBTQ people.
Also, oh my god, a really cool Testament game. And Guilty Gear also non-binary Testament, now.
Yeah, non-binary. Yeah. Yep. So there's tons of possibility for LGBTQ folks to be in all your video games, and packaged wonderfully. Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have more.
Fingers crossed. So going again back to something I said at the top of the show, despite the fact that we've always been here and despite the fact that we've been represented in one way or another, it does seem like within American culture, we are heavily backsliding based on the work that's been done by past generations. Again, there's things happening in tons of other states. Wokeism is running amok, so to speak. and there's, you know, tons and tons of things we are worried about. But on the flip side, we often, especially during June, kind of poke fun at corporations and companies who seem to be kind of pandering, quote unquote, right? Who do not seem fully 100% on board with committing to LGBTQ folks and their rights, except for during June. So my first question, I guess, is there a line, right? So we have Target and Bud Light and all these other companies as of late who have been in the news, especially because of conservative backlash. But, you know, are they really on board with, I guess, policy making, right? Pushing back against certain agendas, or are they just kind of trying to get a few dollars, getting some profits? And is there a line? Do we feel like this is helping us? Do we feel like it's hindering us?
Yeah. For me, the trick is when they do these things, not when they are easy, but when they are hard, right? If Bud Light puts out a can of rainbow beer, and everybody shits the bed about it, and then they keep putting out cans of rainbow beer, yeah, they're probably on our side. They've probably got it figured out. I mean, that's just still capitalism, you know? They'll sell what people buy, you know? You can only be so optimistic about it at the end of the day, but it's better than, you know, doing that, getting pushback for it, and then backing the fuck down like a cowardly piece of shit Budweiser company that you are. I think Budweiser makes Lone Star.
well done.
Hold on. Oof. Union made.
Oh, but, hey.
Says it on the can. But shocking. I don't know. Do you guys follow Opera GX on Twitter?
No.
I haven't until recently. For Pride Month, instead of making their icon rainbow or whatever, their icon is just their normal logo, but underneath it is just two dudes making out.
Perfect.
It's beautiful. I'm going to post the link in the absolutely chat of perfect the image, because nice, it's just, they just don't give a fuck whoever is running this account. It's kind of impressive, actually, how this actually seems to be a brand account that is pretty in touch in a very base level.
Budweiser does own Modelo, though, according to chat.
Ah,
so that's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Like, Modelo got more popular, but same company.
Right.
Yeah, the thing yeah is
how it all works with all those right beer companies.
Yeah, it's all monopolized in one way or another.
For me, the break point is whether or not the support for gay people ends when the money starts having problems, or if people are openly protesting your work. That's when I'm like, okay, this is clearly you're just pandering. You're sure pandering to whoever has the loudest voice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bethany. Shin, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I think for me it's kind of similar there. The line that I would say would be consistency. If a company does it once, not really impressed. If they keep doing it, still not really impressed. If they keep doing it outside of the designated times, like we see this a lot with Black History Month in February, with Pride mm-hmm in June, companies suddenly become very, very focused and very supportive for 30 days. And then as soon as it happens, it's done.
28 in some cases.
28 in some cases, yeah. So like, if the company continues to support past that time or before that time or throughout the year, like, that shows to me that they're a little bit more invested in the community. They're willing to put in a little bit more effort than literally the bare minimum that capitalism says they should.
Sure. Sure, sure, sure. So what should we then expect of companies, right? So taking Florida as a little economic microcosm example here, we have Governor Ron DeSantis versus Disney, right? Where Disney is actively weighing in on legislation being passed in Florida and actively having these back and forth fights with Florida. So do we want Disney to do that, right? Is it dangerous waters where we're having companies and corporations now invested in policy? Not that they aren't already.
I was gonna say,
but is it do we want them to be that invested, if even if it benefits us, right? If it, we know where we stand if it doesn't. But if we start allowing them in even a little mm-hmm bit, do we want that? Is that something we need? And I mean, my heart says no, but
I was gonna say it might be spicy. I think the answer is yes, but only because if they aren't involved, they're effectively going against, right? Like, it's very hard for a company to stay completely neutral. I would say it's impossible for them. So if they are forwarding or progressing different causes within policy, then I think that's really, really, that's a good thing, because, you know, we could use all the help we can get, and a major corporation like Disney has the resources to do that sort of thing. However, I don't think that necessarily is a pass for the company either. Like, it's great that Disney is going against DeSantis. I absolutely, this is the weirdest thing that I've ever said. I'm hoping that Disney wins, because, you know... But outside of that hope that Disney wins this case, it's not like I have hope that Disney is going to completely change as a company, or their corporate stance is really going to be different outside of what supports them in this case so that they can have control over their assets in Florida again. So yeah, I think that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before. Like, the companies could support still, but it's do they continue supporting when things get hard?
Yeah. Sure. And I feel pretty much the same. It's like... I don't think corporations should be involved in politics, but if they're going to be involved, they better be on our fucking side.
Sure. Yeah.
That's sure, pretty sure. much it.
I don't think they can't be not involved. So if they're not on our side, they're against our side, which is just a really bad path for them to go down. We don't want that.
Right. My heart is like, keep the corporations out of everything. Like, if y'all are for-profit businesses, figure it out when we change shit, right? Like, that's the whole point of capitalism, right? You're supposed to be, you know, ingenious and have new ideas based on what the economy is doing and what people want, and yada, yada, yada. And if people want things to go a certain way, then it's up to you to like figure out how to work around that, not for you to get your nose involved in my thing. But on the other hand, I recognize that there are still some private citizens within a company, right? They're not all, you know, you can't say the company is a person, in my opinion, but you can say that the person running the company is a person. So there is going to be some involvement from them as a human in politics. And so that's where I kind of try and make the, you know, the distinction, but I get that it's not that kind of black and white, right? It's all very kind of gray
thing. Yeah.
So what should we do, right? We're just dudes, and or they them dudes,
just ordinary men.
We're just ordinary men.
We're just normal men.
How do we navigate all of this, right? What do we do moving forward? How do we demonstrate? Do we demonstrate, right? What do we do?
Bro, I've been trying to figure that shit out for like 3 years. I don't have an answer.
Yeah. You have the answer for us.
I don't have the answer either. If I did, then we'd be a lot better off.
Yeah.
Whole reason I brought you on was because I thought you had the answers.
Nah, we don't have any answers. Sorry. you brought us on this podcast to talk about things? Oh, fuck.
Oh,
I didn't think that one through.
Well, yeah. Who's been
give
in
me a couple more
spaces.
Beers I'll solve all the world's problems.
As someone who's been in movement spaces for a while, I will say that I think the one thing folks can do, not only vote, right, because that's not a whole lot, but it is also a whole lot, make sure you vote, but also make sure like people around you are voting, right? Make sure people around you are registered to vote. Make sure people around you know where to vote. Your locals, right? I say this mostly in private circles, I guess. I've never said it on this podcast, but politics is very localized. The presidential election is a big one, sure, but your local politics really, 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 really matter. Everything down to school board really, 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 really matters. And I'm not saying go vote for people in a school board election if you don't have kids. That's weird. But if you have a vested
maybe.
Yeah, wait.
I think it's weird to just go to.
I don't know if you're voting for like.
It's a public election. I voted in the school board election.
Have you?
Yeah. Well, I knew a guy that was running.
Oh, there you go. Okay. See, that's a little different.
if you're voting between someone who wants to ban libraries.
Oh, you know what? Fair enough. Because libraries
vote's important.
Everybody. Yes, absolutely. But yes. Yeah. Elections are politics. They're all local. So really get on the ground floor of your elections, right? Start at the bottom and then run up to the top, and figure out, you know, who's running for your school board, apparently, who's running for your mayor, your governor, everything. Just start from the bottom, go straight up, because it all really does matter. Vote for, I swear I've never seen a Democratic sheriff in any city or state. Vote for a Democratic sheriff and see what happens. I would love to see it.
That would be funny.
Because they're all Republicans, I swear. Anyway, that being said,
the only thing that I would have to add to that as well would be to listen, right? Mm. Especially for people who are, even people who are within their various different communities, like listen to those around you, particularly those who have different experiences than you, but... Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things going on and a lot of duplicate efforts, I would say.
Sure.
Or there's a lot of also things where groundwork has already been covered by people who have come before us or people who are actively doing things right now. And if you get like, you're like, oh yeah, my community could really use this. Let's go and like, there's other groups that have done this before.
Yeah. Yeah. Look for the nonprofits in your area.
Yeah.
Get involved with them as much as you can. I know that it's difficult, but give it a try. You never know what could happen. You could help affect some change in your area. So that really answers what, unless we have something specific to say about how allies should help the cause, the movement.
Same thing.
There you go. Okay, I thought so. So to close out the show, let's do one last thing, and that's just uplift some gamers and streamers we know, right? Let's go for like two or three people we can really like celebrate for the next couple of minutes. Paul, you got any in mind?
Oh God, none off the top of my head. I'm sorry to say, I haven't been watching a lot of streamers lately, honestly. Let's
switch it over to Shintir.
Yeah, I'm looking through my list and I'm like, who still streams?
Oh gosh. And, uplift yourself first.
Yeah, I don't stream a whole lot either. But I think one of the things that I know with me personally, the last few years, I've started to try to seek out more like queer LGBTQIA streamers because I haven't typically followed a lot of them.
Sure.
I should have thought of this immediately, and I don't know why. Rook. Rookery is a variety streamer. She streams Guild Wars 2. She streams Final Fantasy. Is a really, really awesome person to chat with and to hang out with. So yeah, Rook and the other streamer that I watched a bunch is Deja Vu D, who's also part of Team Whiskers, which Maelstrom Radio is also part of, or was.
Streamer team.
Not sure where she is now, but also really, really fun streamer who's just, she's awesome.
Very cool, very cool.
There's my shout outs.
I don't have anybody specific, but if you ever watched any speedrunning in the past 5 years, speedrunning is getting queerer and queerer by the day. So at this point, if you watch a Games Done Quick event, you're probably going to trip over like 10 or 15 different queer people in the course of a few hours. Just watch a Games Done Quick and enjoy the madness. Go watch some speedruns. You'll have a good time. That's my suggestion.
Very good. Very good. I have a few. Some of them are in chat. I'm going to first shout out Barry Scrawls, who has been like a pillar of my own little community for quite a while now, since the start of the pandemic, if not before. He has just started doing art streams on Twitch. I think not just started, but maybe within the past few months. And first of all, his art's amazing. Very gay. Secondly, it's just a really fun time, right? It's a really well curated experience on Twitch, and it's fun to be with him. He's a fun DM. He does really cool stuff story wise with D&D. If you've ever sat in on my D&D streams, he does a lot of cool stuff there, and he's just a great guy. There is Lo-Fi Knight, who has been a very good friend of mine for a few years as well, who has also been streaming pretty regularly, I believe. I catch them when I can. Usually they're doing something on a different time zone because they're on the West Coast. but they do very fun, very lo-fi kind of streams, right? It's very chill. Usually we're doing kind of spooky games or kind of farm simulators or something like that. I believe he's going to start doing some Dead by Daylight. So that should be pretty fun. And then a friend of the show and I believe next week's guest, Jeff Brutlag. Jeff is a Hispanic writer, a gamer. He does a lot of Twitch streaming, a lot of horror Twitch streaming specifically as well. I like horror streamers, if you haven't noticed. And Jeff is just a very well-crafted individual, is the way I would put it. He just has very good
good ways of making people feel like they're part of something, right? He's just very good with his words. Makes people feel like really warm and comfy. Is the loudest trans ally I know. he's just wonderful. So yeah, check out those three when you get a chance. Lo-Fi Night, Berry Scrawls, BerryScrawls. Did it. And Jeff Brutlag, whose Twitch is just twitch.tv/ Jeff, JeffBrutlag. Okay, I did it.
You got through it. Good job.
I feel really bad because as soon as I was going through all this, I remembered someone.
Go ahead.
Because I play D&D with him every single week. And we constantly raid streams back and forth. A Palmetto of Moogoogle Round.
Ah, yes. Palmetto. We love Palmetto.
No relationship.
So finally, as we move along toward the end of the show, actually, let's skip recommendations because it's not really that kind of thing this time. Please let us know where we can find you on the internet, Shin, and if you have anything else to plug.
Yeah, you can find me pretty much nowhere. most of my socials are gone or not being actively monitored. You can find me on Tumblr, Shinter, Shyntyrr. But generally, you can find me on Maelstrom Radio at twitch.tv/Maelstrom Radio.
Very cool. Paul,
especially Sundays.
Where are people finding you on the internet?
Sure. So still active for the time being on Twitter at Paul's Rockin' Twit or Paul's Workin' Twit if you want to see where I am working. And I also got my Mastodon URL finally updated, so I now have it spelled correctly. Paul's Rockin' Mastodon. shrike.club/@Paul's Rockin' Mastodon if you want to find me there. Or PaulsRockinMastodon. It bothered me for so long. I made a whole new account because you can't actually change the at tag in Mastodon. You had to make a whole new account for it. It was a pain in the ass, but it was worth it to fix that single letter.
Paul, I just realized you never got a chance to show the people your hand.
Yeah, I was going to show that off. I guess it's not really going to work for podcast, but I'll describe it as well. So I've been pretty into sumo for the past year, and I just got a pretty cool heirloom of sorts. It's called a Tagata, and basically it is a real inked handprint of a sumo wrestler named Tochinoshin. It's white paper with black ink. And it is his. It is a handprint of his left hand with his signature written out in calligraphy, along with two stamps signifying his max rank of Ozeki status. And yeah, the whole thing is printed on a white paper with gold leaf around the edges. I'm going to get it framed, and I'm super proud of it. This thing costs like $230, but it is such a cool thing. It was only like $10 shipping. It wasn't that bad actually.
Wow.
No, this thing is worth far more than the paper it's printed on because of what it represents. Since the sumo wrestler is a guy named Tochinoshin, a wrestler from Georgia who just retired. And I'm just a really big fan of his. I'm sad to see him go, but like, God, he was so banged up. He needed to retire. So I'm going to frame this up and hang it somewhere. Just one more time, show it on stream there. I've also got it on my social media. If you want to see it over on Twitter at Paul's Rockin' Twit. I've got it posted there along with a picture of Tochinoshin himself back in his prime. He's a pretty boy. Large, handsome man.
I was going to say, if you're wondering why I'm bringing this up on Gay Month, it's because like I just met this man. I'm pretty gay for him.
Tochinoshin is an attractive man. Even in the later years of his career, when he was like kind of getting a little bit bigger and was losing kind of his muscle definition, still a very attractive man. Just like, damn. Beautiful. They call him the Georgian forklift because his legs are like the size of tree trunks and his arms are fucking massive. He would lift guys that were like 350 pounds and just bodily pick them up and pull them out of the ring. It was crazy.
Doesn't it make you want to sumo wrestle?
It kind of does, actually. I have thought about doing some sumo wrestling, legitimately.
It just makes me want to be like, hi, fuck me up. It's fine. Just do it.
I want to fuck some other people up. Are you kidding me?
Let's do it.
Hey, Jace, let's wrestle sometime.
I'm in it to win it. Actually, now I'm pumped up. Hang on. Yeah. All right. As always, you can find me at Kami J's Gaming on Twitter. And remember, you can find the Weekly Cooldown on Twitter as well, at WK Cooldown. Be sure to visit. No, don't go to the Facebook page. I'm not on there. Visit WKCooldown.com for more news and other episodes. Be sure to leave a review or comment or both on Apple Podcasts. It helps with the algorithm. It helps the show grow. So do it. I believe you can also now leave a review on Spotify. So do that as well. If you're on Pod Chaser, do it on there as well. Be sure to check out the links in the description, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week. And remember that you can support your favorite charities and support the show. Our logo and art is done by Corgi, and follow Doghouse Corgian on Twitter, DoghouseCorgian, Doghouse Corgian on Twitter. And our intro music is done by Riki. Find Riki on Twitter as well, at @dog_noise, DOG_NOISE. That's all for the Weekly Cooldown. I'm Kami Jace.
I'm Paul Tochinoshin fan Henderson.
I'm Shinter.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.